Hey guys, John here from Fly8MikeAlpha.com, and welcome back to the CFI PTS Area of Operation 1 Fundamentals of Instruction. We are now on to Task F, the Techniques of Flight Instruction. All right, so the Techniques of Flight Instruction, this one pertains a little bit more to what you'll actually be doing in the real airplane, which is kind of cool. A little bit of a change of pace here from our normal theoretical stuff. So the objective here is to determine that the applicant exhibits instructional knowledge of instructor responsibilities and professionalism by describing the below. What do you have to describe? Well, you need to describe the obstacles in learning during flight instruction. You need to describe demonstration performance training delivery. So what is demonstration performance training delivery? You need to describe the positive exchange of flight controls. Also need to describe what a sterile cockpit is. Describe the use of distractions and how those incorporate into flight training. Describe integrated flight instruction. Describe assessment of piloting ability. And lastly, describe aeronautical decision making. That's a tricky one to describe there. But we will give you guys our best explanation that we can here in the fewest words possible, so you get a nice thorough understanding of each of these eight topics or each of these eight aspects of Techniques of Flight Instruction Task F in the CFI PTS. So, for number one, obstacles in learning during flight instruction. Well, a couple different obstacles that they point out in the flight instructor's handbook. These are going to be things like unfair treatment, impatience, worry or lack of interest, physical discomfort, fatigue, apathy, and anxiety. All right, so let's talk about these just really quickly. Unfair treatment, well, that would be if there's unreasonable demands placed on the student, right? So you're just expecting them to do something that's just totally unrealistic for them to actually be able to do, then that's really unfair, right? If you say, hey, go ahead and call up approach and ask them for vectors over here, and they go, what's a vector? You know, it's not fair for you to expect them to know that. And if they should know it, but they don't, well, it's not fair for you to keep pushing them to try to do that. Obviously, if they don't know something, you need to brief it better on the ground. So be fair in your treatment of your students in the airplane, and of course, at all times. Now, impatience, you really need to emphasize the importance of preliminary training for the ultimate objective here, okay? So don't be impatient and just want to run into the airplane and go do something. The importance of preliminary training is huge here, right? We have to do a good pre-brief for the student to actually be able to absorb the information that we're going to be presenting in the airplane. So we need to tell them what we're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. You do that on the ground, and you want to prepare them on the ground for what you're going to do in flight, and then you debrief at the end of it. Always those three parts to the learning process. Now, the next one here, we have worry or lack of interest. So that's going to be detrimental to learning, and it has to absolutely be diverted. So if they are worried about the flight, or they just have a lack of interest in a certain topic, you have to create interest for them, or you have to put them at ease so they're not worrying. You can see people get nervous in airplanes sometimes. They start white-knuckling the flight controls, it gets a little bumpy out, or there's a maneuver they're afraid of. If you start seeing those signs where they're sweating, their veins are popping out of their neck or their forehead, and you see them white-knuckling on the flight controls, well, try to speak in a nice, calm voice and put them at ease. Next thing, physical discomfort, all right? So illness, fatigue, dehydration, air sickness, any sort of physical discomfort, not going to go over so well in the airplane. If you sense any sort of physical discomfort on the part of your student, you need to do something to remedy it. That could be, hey, you know, if you're air sick and it's real bumpy today, we just need to go land. If they're just dehydrated, hey, you know, conveniently enough, we keep some bottles of water in the backseat of the airplane. Here, take a few sips, take a minute, try to get back up to speed. If it's really bad, of course, you could go land, cancel the lesson, whatever, but make sure they're not physically uncomfortable. Next thing is fatigue. So fatigue is going to be a huge barrier, huge obstacle to us actually training effectively in the airplane. So if they are fatigued, you might consider just canceling the lesson and waiting for them to be a little bit more alert when they come back. Fatigue, the signs here are going to be inattention, distractibility, errors in timing, neglect of any sort of secondary tasks, loss of accuracy and control, lack of situational awareness, and error accumulation. So where things just start piling up and they're making a lot of errors, all right? I can tell you from when I was a private pilot in training and drove from Florida to Michigan 20-some hours straight, got there, slept for a few hours, and then went for a flight lesson, and I was doing all sorts of goofy things. I thought the altimeter was the DG, I was turning the airplane, but the altimeter wasn't changing, and I was like, oh man, I need to look at the other instrument. Just goofy things were going on in my mind. I was super fatigued, and the instructor should have picked up on that by how distracted I was getting, the errors I was making, the neglect of secondary tasks, of getting distracted during a checklist, whatever it was. Obviously, I was very tired. Not a good time to fly. Huge obstacle to flight training in the airplane. Best thing to do, just cancel the lesson, let the student get some sleep. Next thing, apathy. So apathy due to inadequate instruction. That can happen with students sometimes where they just feel like, hey, I'm not going to put the effort in here. This is silly because the instructor isn't giving me good instruction. Either they're incompetent because they're just making things up and they don't know the information. They're not studying before the lesson, or they're being mean, or I'm just not absorbing information from them. So apathy due to inadequate instruction is a real obstacle to learning in the airplane. And you want to make sure you're providing good quality instruction. One of the easiest ways to do this is use a lesson plan before, during, and after, right? So on the pre-brief, in the airplane, bring up a little checklist so you make sure you hit all the key points. You're providing thorough instruction and good feedback to the student. And then on the ground, again, use that lesson plan, use your checklist, make sure you're providing good feedback to the student. The last obstacle we have here is going to be anxiety. So the student must be comfortable and confident in the instructor and the aircraft, all right? They need to have confidence in your abilities as a pilot, as a flight instructor, to be able to fix situations so they can actually make some mistakes and not be terribly afraid of making a mistake that you won't be able to correct. They need to be confident in the aircraft. So if the airplane looks like a piece of junk, they may lose some confidence in it. This is the funny thing, right? Obviously, we have to fly safe, legal airplanes, but sometimes a safe, legal airplane looks like junk and it makes the student very anxious and nervous. Sometimes airplanes that may not be that safe or may be fudged a little bit in the logbooks look nice because they've got a fresh paint job, but they're actually pieces of junk, and it puts the student at ease because they don't know any better. Ultimately, you want a nice-looking airplane that the student's comfortable in, they have confidence in the airplane and the instructor, and of course, everything is good, safe, and legal. Now, that is the obstacles we have to learning during flight instruction. So obstacles to learning in the airplane: unfair treatment, impatience, worry or lack of interest, physical discomfort like illness or fatigue, actual fatigue itself, just being too tired to learn, apathy due to inadequate instruction, or anxiety. All right, now number two on task F, techniques of flight instruction, that's going to be demonstration performance training delivery, all right? So what is the demonstration performance method of training delivery? Well, it has a couple different parts here, and those parts are going to be that first, we have to give an explanation. Next, we have to demonstrate, so the demonstration comes next. Then student performance and instructor supervision, those are happening concurrently or happening at the same time, and then evaluation. So actually pretty simple here, right? Demonstration performance method is simply going to be explain it, do it, student then does it, and you supervise, and then you provide an evaluation at the end of it, all right? So explanation, demonstration, student performance, instructor supervision, that happens at the same time, and then evaluation. The example here is you go ahead and explain to them how to do a power-off stall, you demonstrate it, and then you have the student do exactly what you just demonstrated, maybe while you're talking them through it. You supervise and critique as they're going through it, maybe give them a little bit of feedback as they're going through it or talk them through the maneuver, and then you evaluate how they did. So that is the demonstration performance training delivery method. Now, number three on techniques of flight instruction, task F here, is positive exchange of flight controls, all right? So the positive exchange of controls, this is really simple. You probably heard it before. Three-step process. You have the controls. They say, I have the controls. You say, you have the controls. You have to teach this to your students, so when they pass the controls back to you, they will then say, you have the controls. You say, I have the controls, and they say, you have the controls. Now, it's going to take a few times of doing this, and you know, saying it more than three times is okay if you have to go back and forth with them. The whole idea here is to really, 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 really know who's in the controls and who's flying the airplane. You can say, well, that's obvious. Like, I'm never going to not know who's flying the airplane, or I'm always going to be there ready to grab the controls. Trust me, 99.99% of the time, sure, I agree with you. It's all fine and dandy, whatever. It's only going to bite you in the butt once really hard, and it can really hurt you. So make sure you know who's flying the airplane at all times. Always use the positive exchange of controls, especially if you're splitting the controls where all of a sudden they're doing something on the yoke and you're doing something on the pedals. Always be very clear about who's doing what and when those controls 100% move back to another person. Always delegate and announce who's supposed to be doing what in the airplane. That falls under just good CRM. Now, number four on our list here for techniques of flight instruction, task F, is sterile cockpit. Now, the true definition of sterile cockpit is anytime below 10,000 feet, except for cruise flight, you need to have a sterile cockpit. You need to only talk about things pertinent to the flight. Well, typically when you're doing a flight lesson with students, everything you're saying is pertinent to the flight. So you're going to have to go a little bit above and beyond here, the FAA definition. Yes, this works for the airliners, the guys flying Airbuses and Boeings and all that stuff and 737s. Sure. below 10,000 feet, they don't talk about the sports score game for the football game or whatever. During taxi takeoff and landing, they keep the conversation only to pertinent things. And then in cruise flight or above 10,000 feet, they get to, you know, shoot the breeze about whatever. We rarely get above 10,000 feet. And the whole purpose of flight training is to transfer knowledge. There's an endless amount of knowledge to transfer. You shouldn't really be shooting the breeze with your student. But what you will have to do is learn when it is okay to say things and when it's not okay to say things. You don't want to distract your student at a really critical phase of flight. And you definitely don't want to have your cell phone ring or be looking at your cell phone during taxi, takeoff, or landing or anything like that. So sterile cockpit, think about how this applies to our airplanes that we fly. The FAA definition is, you know, nothing during taxi, takeoff, or landing except what's pertinent to the flight, and nothing that's not pertinent to the flight below 10,000 feet. Once you get above 10,000 feet, then you can go ahead and shoot the breeze. Well, that doesn't really apply to us as flight instructors. So that's the FAA definition. You need to come up with a good explanation of your own, like, hey, we just don't look at the iPad while the airplane's rolling. We turn our cell phones off before we get in the airplane. We mitigate, you know, or I'm going to mitigate as an instructor when I'm going to be providing feedback or critique to the student in flight, because there's some points that are a good time to say things and some points that are just more distracting than others. Like maybe there's a radio call coming in, you don't want to speak over that. Now, after talking about sterile cockpit, it makes sense to move on into number five, use of distractions. All right, so we're trying to avoid distractions by having a nice sterile cockpit. Number five on the techniques of flight instruction here is the use of distractions. So when is it good to use distractions? Well, the whole purpose of using distractions is to determine the applicant has the skills required to cope with distractions while maintaining the degree of aircraft control required for safe flight. Now, this is a really gray area and you have to operate within a safe envelope here. But have I watched a student leave their cell phone on and put it in their pocket? And have I actually gone ahead and called them while they apply full power for takeoff on the takeoff roll to see what happens and just leave my phone on the lap and hit dial and then see if they get distracted by their phone ringing? Have I done things like flip a door open while we're on the takeoff roll or knock a window open or something like that? Or while they're flaring, pop the door open on them? Yeah, but that can lead to really bad things really quick. So don't necessarily take that as a bit of advice of what you should do. Always operate within your own comfort level as an instructor. But those are things that I've done personally. Don't recommend you try them, but we do need to incorporate some level of distractions into flight training for our students so that they can develop the skills to cope with those distractions once they're flying the airplane without us on board, to be there to help them deal with distractions and help fix things for them. So we need to somehow incorporate distractions into flight training to ensure they maintain the degree of aircraft control that's going to be required for safe flight, especially once you're no longer on board. So think of a few examples you might want to come up with for your particular CFI check ride of how you might incorporate distractions into your flight training for the particular aircraft that you're flying as an instructor or that you're going to be flying. Now, moving on to number six here, integrated flight instruction. So what is integrated flight instruction? Well, the idea of integrated flight instruction is really just trying to combine visual maneuvers with some reference to instruments, right? So we're going to be looking inside and looking outside. We definitely want to emphasize the looking outside part because seeing and avoiding is probably the most important thing here, all right? We need to develop a good habit in our students of looking outside for other traffic at all times. The keys here are we want to develop a habit of continuously monitoring their own performance and the aircraft's performance, referencing outside and glancing back into the instruments, because sometimes, especially with students, the nose might drop a half a degree and they just can't visually see that because their eyes haven't been really trained well enough yet for that, but they will notice a slight decrease on the VSI and altimeter. So that integrated flight instruction method can be great, but they should not be focusing on the instruments too much. That's probably the most common error here is they get locked onto, especially one instrument like the altimeter or VSI, or just their eyes are in the cockpit way too much. It should be most of the time spent outside, you know, and you can say different rules here, 99% of the time outside, 1% inside, 95% or 90% outside, 10% inside, whatever it might be. Teach them to just glance at the instruments and look at the needle and judge a trend, or look at the trend vectors on their glass cockpit and just glance inside rather than focusing and trying to read a number. That's why analog gauges can sometimes be nice to train students with. Steam gauge airplanes are nice to train in because glass cockpits often require us to actually read numbers and interpret those, whereas steam gauge airplanes, we can just quickly glance at a needle and immediately know based on where it's pointing, whether that's good or bad, without actually consciously thinking about what the altitude is or what our rate of descent is, whether it's 400 or 500 feet a minute. We just know we want to see the needle at this angle. We know that if the airspeed needle is horizontal, that means 70 knots or whatever it does for an airplane, and that's good. We don't have to actually think, okay, 70 or 72 or 76, is that high or low, as you're trying to think reading from a glass panel. So steam gauges can be really helpful for integrated flight instruction. But the whole idea with integrated flight instruction is you're looking inside, you're looking outside, make sure you develop good habits in them to spend most of the time looking outside. Number 7 on techniques of flight instruction is going to be assessment of piloting ability, all right? So these can be some obstacles to flight instruction if you don't do these things right. You want to make sure you're always assessing the student's ability correctly. The idea here is that you're going to provide direction and guidance to raise the level of performance, right? That's the whole idea of flight instruction. We're trying to make them better. We're trying to take a guy off the street and make them better, make them a good pilot. All right, so we want to look at demonstrability. So based on the standards of performance modified to student experience and stage of development as a pilot. So that's a kind of a mouthful there, but demonstrability is basically, hey, how are they performing for where they're at in training? This is lesson 3. Are they doing good for lesson 3? Or this is lesson 20. Are they doing good for where they should be on lesson 20? Demonstrability. What are they demonstrating and how does that compare to where they're at with their stage for experience and development overall as a pilot? Next, we have post-flight evaluation. This is really key to making sure the flight lesson is useful and purposeful, okay? So a post-flight evaluation, you need to keep the student informed of their progress and give them the post-flight critiques that you want to pass on to them. So say, hey, these things went well, these things went not so well, and overall, here's where you stand as a student. Here's where you are progress-wise. We have, 7 lessons in and we've got about 20-something more to go. So you're about a third of the way through or just over a quarter of the way through. You're doing good and you're great for, 7 lessons so far. You're above average. Keep it up. Good job, all that. Post-flight evaluation is really key to making sure that the flight lesson is actually useful. That's part of assessment of piloting ability. Next thing for the assessment of piloting ability is going to be first solo flight, right? So the instructor must be present to assist in resolving any issue or questions prior to the first solo flight, and you should really be present during the first solo flight. A lot of times I'm out there with a handheld. I do a lot of training around non-towered airports where I can just simply talk to the student directly. Even at a towered airport, the tower knows me. They see me stand on the ramp with a handheld in my hand and an airplane taxiing away with just one person in it. They can assume I'm soloing a student. Sometimes I'll even call them on ground frequency or call them on my cell phone and say, hey, got a student going up solo, and I can always talk to the student directly or they can talk to me directly if they have any, uncertainties or any questions or anything doesn't quite feel right. They have that kind of reassurance and kind of decrease their anxiety by knowing that, yeah, I'm just a button push away and they can talk to me even though they're up there by themselves. And ultimately, it's all up to them to get that airplane back on the ground safely. Next thing is post-solo debrief. You want to be out there watching them, being able to provide assistance if needed. Just so you know, I've never had to do that for a student. I've soloed lots and lots of students. Never actually had to jump on the radio and talk to a student other than to tell them, hey, you've done too many touch and goes. I said 3, bring it on back in. I know you're having fun, but that's like number 6. Let's call it a day, all right? I've done that actually several times, but never had to talk to them to calm them down or to help with any sort of mechanical issues or anything going wrong during the flight. But I am out there watching so that I can go ahead and critique them afterwards. And a lot of times I have binoculars or something so I can provide a good post-solo debrief to the student after they come back in. Even though I wasn't in the airplane, I can still see what the flight controls are doing. I know what they're doing input-wise. I can see what the aircraft is doing. They're touching down on one wheel or on two wheels or whatever it might be, and I can provide a good debrief for that lesson at the end of it. So that's the assessment of piloting ability. We need to do those things. Otherwise, if you don't do those things, it's going to become an obstacle to learning during good flight instruction. Now, lastly here, we have aeronautical decision-making, number 8 in techniques of flight instruction, all right? Aeronautical decision-making. Now, this is a mouthful to be able to explain, but we're going to explain it in the shortest way possible just using the FAA's words. Aeronautical decision-making is a systematic approach to the mental process used by pilots to constantly determine the best course of action in response to a given set of circumstances. All right, this includes risk management, situational awareness, CRM, the poor judgment chain, skills and procedures, stress management, personality, attitude, headwork, and overall judgments that they're going to make as a pilot, all right? They need to recognize hazardous attitudes. That's a huge part of good aeronautical decision-making. If they can recognize their own mistakes or own hazardous attitudes, it can prevent them from making mistakes or making bad decisions. The whole idea here is how the student makes decisions. This goes back to those HOTS, higher order thinking skills, and how are we going to incorporate that into flight training? So, well, the FAA's definition here for part 8 of techniques of flight instruction, aeronautical decision making, well, their definition is aeronautical decision making is a systematic approach to the mental process used by pilots to constantly determine the best course of action in response to a given set of circumstances. What they're ultimately saying here, what you might say in your own words, what I would say in my own words is, this is an approach that the student has to use, and it's a mental process they need to develop, and it's my job as a flight instructor to foster the development of this mental process within the student to make good decisions before, during, and after the flight. So this is good pre-flight planning. This is good checking the weather. This is good go, no-go decision making. These are those higher order thinking skills that we develop with scenario-based training to try to convey our experience and our hundreds of hours or thousands of hours experience that we have to this pilot with just 5, 10, or 40 hours in their logbook. We're trying to transfer years of experience to them so that they can make good decisions, because now, years into this, we make good decisions, but only because we made a lot of mistakes, and we're trying to prevent them from making the same mistakes we did. We're trying to make sure they can make good decisions. That's really the root of just about any mistake, is bad decisions. So we're trying to train them to make good decisions, and scenario-based training is probably the best way we can do that as a flight instructor. That is the 8 parts of Techniques of Flight Instruction, Task F of Area of Operation 1, Fundamentals of Instruction in the CFI PTS. Woohoo! The next one is, of course, Task G, Risk Management, and that is going to be the end of the Fundamentals of Instruction in the CFI PTS, and then I promise it gets a little bit more interesting from there.